Welcome to the Phi Life Podcast. I'm John Barber, and with me is Brad Pilon. And today we're going to talk about a powerlifting meet we just recently attended and Brad competed at. Brad did a push-pull, so that means he did a bench press and a deadlift. And there was other parts of the meet where there was bench press, deadlift, and a squat, so that was different. So basically we're just going to talk about how Brad did at the meet and kind of what goes into a powerlifting meet and sort of the different subculture that powerlifting is all about.
Yeah, it's you know, I remember when I did the first bodybuilding show, and previous to the show, you kind of just think the bodybuilding is just posing on stage, right? And then when you do the show, you realize that, holy crap, like, posing on stage is just way harder than you think. It really is an art that takes practice. And then, you know, posing without a mirror versus posing with a mirror is a world of difference. And being able to hold the pose and just prepping for the contest in those last couple hours, you know, there's a lot more to it than just getting lean and showing up on stage. Right? Powerlifting is the same. Like, it blew me away, the amount of prep, procedure, and I guess procedure is a little bit of tradition, a little bit of just sort of, I don't know, randomness thrown in there. But also, it's just that there's an art to picking. I don't know how many people are familiar with it, but you basically have your bench press and your dead. I didn't do squats. And you have three lifts, right? So you get to lift three times, and then you get to pick your heaviest of those lifts. Sounds dirt simple, but the prep for it and picking your numbers, and it was just, it really opened my eyes that the actual event itself takes a lot of skill and, again, and art. It's not just a matter of getting strong and going and competing.
Yeah, it's when we were talking about this with some other powerlifters who were explaining that the initial learning curve is pretty big there. The first time you're at a meet, you don't realize. I mean, it's a big difference to pause a bench press on your chest at the gym just to try it, and to do it at a meet when you have a judge telling you when it's your turn to push. So it's the biofeedback. You don't have that in the gym. You don't have somebody else telling you when to actually push the bar.
Exactly. I actually missed my last bench. So I nailed the 286 in my second attempt, and that was kind of supposed to be something that I was comfortable with. And then I was going on to my next lift, and it was like a 3 or something like that, 305, 310. And I brought that down, and the pause felt like it was forever. And then I watched the tape that you guys took of it. It was your pretty standard pause. But since I'm not the one in control of when that person's going to say go, it's a very interesting sort of psychological battle. And if you didn't stay 100% tight and 100% ready to push, when that person says go, if there's a brief minute of hesitation where you're trying to get powered up to do it again, you won't make it. I didn't. So that part alone, like, you know, from training in your basement, getting strong, even training in the gym, without having an outside cue to bench, let me tell you, it's much, much different.
Yeah, and that's the difference between gym strength and competition strength. A lot of powerlifters mention that. Besides the equipment and stuff, you didn't use any equipment, but just learning to push with somebody else telling you when to go, like you said, you could totally miss it even if the bar is just slightly kind of lowering into your chest when you're at the bottom. Like, it has to be perfectly still. And so the judge will just sit there and wait till it's perfectly still. And all of that time, you're losing energy trying to control the bar. So it's a different thing. It's a totally different feeling. It's not at all what it feels like to be working out in the gym.
Yeah, no, yeah, very different. And then I found in the deadlift, even though you don't have someone telling you when to pick the bar up, right? You only have about a minute to eat. And you're not allowed to be near the bar when it's being loaded. If you saw what happened when I was standing watching load the bar. I got yelled at to move away from it, right? So that was a little awkward. But then you just sort of walk up, you look at the bar for a second and pick it up. And you're out of your comfort zone, right? So, I mean, the first time I deadlifted, I reached down, grabbed the bar, and I'm like, wow, this bar is way thicker than the one I use at home, right? And so instantly, I'm in the middle of a psychological game with myself, right? Being like, it doesn't matter how thick the bar is, feeling, just pick the damn thing up, right? So that one was extremely difficult because even after I did my first pull, and I think, what was the first pull, like 315, 320, something like that, I ran into an issue there where I had only been training at home with 310 pounds of weight for just reps or with chains on it because that's all the weight I owned. right? So everything above that became a guessing game all of a sudden, right, in terms of shooting how much can I actually really lift. So the deadlift was interesting because I think we went up to 360, 370. The reason I'm having problems remembering the numbers, just so people don't think I have the worst memory ever, is because all the numbers were in kilograms, so I'm trying to convert them to pounds. But on that last lift, it was 360, 370, and I just, the minute I put that, like, sort of got up to knee height, I was like, oh, you know, my car probably could have got about 4.4.10 on this, right? But it was that giant unknown if it's a different bar. I've never trained up to that weight. So just a lot of learning. I think that going into a powerlifting meet, I mean, you have to be 100% prepped. You have to know exactly what weights you plan on hitting, you know, and know exactly what that weight's going to feel like. Maybe practice it with your buddies giving you the pause signs, and then, you know, just anything you can to just sort of get you out of the comfort of your own gym. It's an art. I have a newfound respect for people who do it for, I guess, the recreational hobby, I guess what you'd say, but on people who do it regularly, it's definitely a skill.
Yeah, you just, well, what you would do is recreate the actual event of the meet with an experienced lifter kind of explaining to you how it all works. For example, you after one of your lifts, you came over to me and you mentioned how little time there was between lifts, but that was just your perception. You were actually up on the platform and lifting faster than everybody else in the meet. And I remember you thinking you didn't have a lot of time, but you had a lot of time. You just weren't using it all, whereas the people before and after you were using the full minute. You probably had the lift completed in the first 15 seconds. So you misinterpreted what that minute felt like up on the plat. It probably felt like a, you know, you were right up against the minute, but you were probably the quickest lifter up there. So it actually – You weren't even using the amount of time you had, so your perception of how much time you had was off too.
Well, totally, because I'm used to, you know, again, home gym, getting ready to bench. I'll be sitting on the bench, but in between reps, yeah, I'm on the computer. In between sets, I'm on the computer. I'm doing stuff. I'm taking my time to set up. I'm getting set up exactly the way I want. So the minute I heard, you know, you have 60 seconds to get ready, I panicked. And as a result, I got ready and did the entire lift in about 20 seconds, right? So agreed. It's almost to the point where, as you're getting close to the contest, especially if you're, I guess, wherever you're lifting has the same regulations as where I lifted, you'd almost want to, like, load up the bar and then take a couple steps away, and, like, a decent, like, get out of that room, and then go, okay, 1 minute, go get ready, you know, so sit in the bar, get set up, just so you know exactly when someone tells you only have a minute to get ready, you're not panicking.
Yeah, and that's just a learning curve. It's, I mean, I can see how once a lifter's done two or three meets, they've told – now I think your true – how much – the true weight you can lift or how much you actually – how strong you really are at a meet may not show through until you've done two or three meets and all of those first-time jitters are out of the way, and now you know exactly what to expect. You know how the warm-up room works. You know, like, the timing of it all and waiting on the judge's signal. And then maybe three or four meets in – that's really how strong you are, or at least now all of the beginner stuff's out of the way, and now just how strong you actually are will show through.
Well, I'm pretty sure that I could not train and then in August go and do another contest and beat them. I mean, those numbers are almost downright embarrassing for me, right? It was 286 on bench and like a 370 on deadlift, and it was just learning curve, right? Like, I'm sure I could go up knowing what my numbers were last time, what the warm-up was like last time, what the setup was like. I get rid of a lot of stress and anxiety and just better my numbers just based on experience.
Probably. Yeah, I would think so for sure, because it was just, I mean, you know, the judges were hounding you for their totals or for your next lift in between lifts.
And I'm trying to do the math, to do the kilograms of pounds to figure out what the hell it's going to be.
Yeah, every single time they were like, you know, Pilon, we need your numbers. So
I'm like, I know, I don't know what to tell you.
You're like, so do I. I don't even know what they are.
I'm in the back of the calculator trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
It's a little more prep and you know, obviously – you do better. The other thing I found interesting is then when you talk to people who are non-powerlifting people, and I was talking / whining about all pausing you do in the bench. I mean, you unrack it, you pause, that's perfectly motionless. You bring it down your chest, and you pause, and you press it back up. And the immediate thing that people are asking me is like, oh, well, should I be training that way? And I'm like, you know, probably not. Like, if you're not planning on competing, there's just a lot of extra stress where you've got a lot of weight, you're not moving, you're just sitting there pausing it for no reason. I don't know. I can't see a reason for somebody who's not planning on competing on doing that much pausing of the bench press. I don't think it makes it any more effective. Like, I don't think your triceps and shoulders get bigger because you're pausing it. I just think it would make you a much better powerlifter in competition, but I don't see any reason for the average person to practice pausing. I don't know. What do you think?
I don't know. That's just taking a rep and turning it into parts, having a eccentric, concentric, and isotonic, like a pause part, and there's no point in combining all three of those into one rep unless you're going to be tested that way somehow. It doesn't really make any sense from a muscle adaptation standpoint. You're
making it harder but not more effective, right?
Well, what you're doing is you're removing the stretch reflex that you get from doing a kind of a motion, an up-down motion. There is some stretch reflex. That's why they do the pause. Otherwise, people – they do it to remove that and to remove the bounce. Like, some people just bounce the bar off their chest. So there's reasons why at a competition – otherwise, the competition's not fair. But as far as the average person going to the gym just working out, trying to build a muscle, make it stronger, make it bigger, the stretch reflex isn't a bad thing at all. So it's – you're not advancing your ability to train strength and size by removing it. So it's kind of it's pointless unless you're competing.
Yeah, sure. And the other thing I noticed, I thought was interesting, is when you looked at the majority of the experienced powerlifters and they're shaped in the traditional way you'd expect a powerlifter to be shaped. You know, you look at them long enough, you're like, you know what? If you dieted down, you'd look exactly like a bodybuilder. I think that when it comes down to it, as much as we want to pretend that everything's different, muscle's muscle, and the powerlifters that are carrying a lot of muscle, if they dieted down, would look a heck of a lot like a bodybuilder carrying a lot of muscle. I know we like to talk about how it's specific and how there's, you know, different ways the muscles lay down, but, I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Most of the powerlifters do have decent-sized arms, right? Like, it's not like they have beam-pull arms and they're all chest because they've got massive triceps. They all have big upper backs, but it's not like they don't have wide backs too. Like, I think the idea of really ripping bodybuilding and powerlifting apart into two different distinct sports, you kind of look at it going like, yeah, I know some really, really strong bodybuilders who, if they practice and prepared for a powerlifting competition, would do well. I'm not saying they blow away records, I think they do well. And looking at that competition, I'm like, yeah, there's a couple people here who would diet down and easily win a level one show. So that was one of the main things I realized too, is that when it comes down to it, muscles, and well, muscle growth is specific to the muscle being worked. I mean, you work every muscle training, especially if you're, I mean, powerlifters don't just do bench squat. They have to do a lot of extra work, I mean, exercises to help them improve at those specific exercises. So they do work pretty much all the muscles in the body. Mm-hmm. Right? Like I just found that really interesting. Everybody likes to separate them so much, those two areas. And I know that the mentality is very different, but I think the end result is very similar.
Yeah, and I think that's the tricky part of it. It's actually difficult, at least for some people, to borrow from each part without getting caught up in the lifestyle. Like, there's only so much powerlifting you can do, you know, in an effort to just improve the look and shape of your body, and until you become sort of part of the powerlifting culture at the gym, and then the next thing you know, you're competing, and then the next thing you know, you're getting made fun of for being too lean, and all of a sudden you're gaining fat mass because it's the culture of powerlifting to just be thick, to be big, and you know, I remember when I was training the powerlifting guys, they'd make fun of guys who train their arms directly. They're like, oh, you know, what are you doing that for? And they kind of looked down upon the guys who trained for aesthetics, for actual the look. So I was – so it, even though like what you just said, it's muscles, muscle, and powerlifting lifts just still train muscles. It's the lifestyle that sort of captures people. And it's kind of – you know, it's easy to get involved. And people just don't want to be – psychologically, it's not fun to be working out and having people constantly pick on you or joke with you. And even though it's sort of in jest and tongue-in-cheek, it gets tiring. You just don't want to keep hearing people make fun of you when you go do a set of curls because you're like, well, you know, I want to train my arms. So just like leave me alone and, you know, just because you don't doesn't mean I'm not gonna.
Right.
So that's something to be aware of no matter what training style you pick up. If there's sort of an intense identity culture wrapped around it, there will be some social pressures to fit into that culture.
Yeah.
Perfect example. I know a powerlifter who trains on a team here in town who has memberships at two separate gyms specifically for that reason. He goes to the powerlifting
gym. Trains aren't the other one?
Yeah, he goes to the powerlifting gym, and he's immensely strong. He's got, like, he's really strong. He's a great powerlifter. But he also obviously likes the shape of his body and doesn't want to, like, you know, he wants to do some proportion training too. So when he does his serious powerlifting lifts, he goes to the powerlifting gym, and then he comes to the other gym to do some other styles of training that perhaps the powerlifters might, you know, give him a bit of hard time, tease him a bit. But he's like, it's enough that he would actually go to a different gym over it. So that just tells you, like, how kind of sort of, I don't know what the word is, but how the culture can, it's hard. Like, socially, it's hard to be around people who have a fixed way they want things to be. And even though it's tongue-in-cheek teasing, it does wear away at you to the point where you're like, I just don't want to deal with that.
Yeah, so you just stop training your arms. Yeah, but all in all, a definite experience. But like I said right in sort of the intro here, it's just, it amazes me how much technique and skill goes into just pulling off the event properly, right? So it's really simple just to, you know, every night go down to the gym, hammer the weights, and get big and strong. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do well in an actual competition. The same with it's actually relatively easy just to hammer the weights and get big and then diet down and kind of sort of look like a bodybuilder. Completely different to actually step on stage and perform, right? Like, no matter whether or not you like bodybuilders or powerlifters, you have to give them the respect for how difficult the actual events can be, right? So, I mean, even as an example, I mean, in the gym, hitting, 295 on bench for 6 or 7 is fairly routine for me. But in a powerlifting contest, 286, because all the pausing and people watching you and stuff, was my max lift, right? So you got to give them credit for being able to perform in those situations.
Yeah, and some of it's familiarity and comfort. It's odd that you had that reaction, or at least there's two reactions that I know powerlifters have. Some guys always pull their heaviest weight at a meet because they have the adrenaline and the excitement just gets them fired up, and they seem to always outlift their gym max at a meet. Like, they just know that they get excited, they get jacked up, and they just know over time that they've learned that, yep, they can lift about 5% more at a meet purely because of adrenaline, and they're just the rush of being in front of the crowd. Whereas other guys, they sort of overdo it, overpsych themselves at whatever it is, and they actually can't lift as much at a meet as they can in the gym. Maybe it's because they're just more comfortable in the gym, and this is working up to a competition, doing a pause, doing all that stuff at the gym, and they always seem to be able to outlift their meet at the gym. And I've talked to lots of guys, and it just seems to be that you either have one or the other reaction. You either need to back off a bit at the meet, or you know you can push even harder at the meet.
Yeah.
Compared to what you can max out at in the gym.
And I found it funny because I'm the type of guy who loves an audience, right? But what happened to me was the definite psych out of that thicker bar, who was definitely that just mental games the whole time, right? Like, I even came out and talked to you about it, and you're like, dude, it's not going to make a giant difference, just push, right? So, and even if it did make a difference on deadlift based on grip, which it didn't because I could have pulled more, it should have made that big of a difference in bench, but it was there, it was noticeable, so I was trying to figure out how to deal with it.
Well, yeah, and you combine that with you weren't really you were misinterpreting what 60 seconds really was, so you felt rushed. And then in between your lifts, you were being hounded by the judges to have your second lift attempt numbers in, like, immediately. So you were probably at, like, five things going through your head. Then you grab the bar. You're like, oh, man, this isn't even the right size bar. And then you're totally off.
Yeah. So just, again, it's a new respect for the people who do lifting, right? Again, I'm just impressed by it as an actual event, I guess is the best thing to call it. The trying to think of what else I found interesting about the whole event. Oh, I'd love to talk to people. Maybe people tell them about the getting down to weight. So I decided to compete at the 165-pound class. No real reason other than to make sure I could get down to that weight, see what it would be like. And so I spent, normally on a really good fast, I can get down to, like, 171, 172 after 24 hours of fasting. So I'm like, okay, well, obviously I'm going to do this powerlifting and eat fasting, right? Just to sort of prove a point that you don't have to eat 3 Snickers bar in between each lift. And so I just have to just drop a little bit of weight, and then I'm going to drop some water for the weigh-in. Right? So over the course of about, 2.5 weeks, I got my fasted weight down to about 168, and then was kind of, did a bit of a longer... Sorry, not longer is not the right word. In between my second last fast and my last fast is on the Friday, just sort of watch what I ate. So on the very last Friday, and the meet was on a Saturday. I think my fasted weight was just in the 167s, like 167.8 or 0.9 kind of thing. And that day at around 3, I dropped my water, as the saying goes. So I just stopped drinking fluids with my fast and just had like sips of water here or there and chewed an ice cube. That morning, for the weigh-in, I think I hit 164.
Yep.
Right? So dropped a ton of weight just from not drinking and was ridiculously lean. Right? So the important point there is it's, you know, just dropping your water can account for an extra 2 to 3, 3.5 pounds weight. And this is, I didn't even drop for 24 hours, right? The other thing I found really interesting was just how lean I was when that water was dropped. It's kind of a weird word. And then, the weighing was at 7:30, and then, of course, right after the weigh-in, I was drinking water like normal. By 11:30, I was fully hydrated, probably back up to 169, 170. But the couple of photos we snapped of just sort of on our way out, this is about noon, and I still had that really sort of thin skin. Like, I was definitely much leaner in those photos than I probably was the very next day. So the important lesson there is that, yes, water accounts for a large amount of your body and is highly flexible in terms of how much it can go up and down. It also has a very large effect on how lean you look, I think, especially when you are fairly lean to begin with. And I think it's really important for people to remember when you're looking at photo shoots or before and after pictures or pictures of famous athletes or models or, you know, that one scene in that one movie where some dude takes his shirt off and is jacked, is it not only – you know, is he training hard, dieting well, our drugs may or may not be in question, but we have the whole water manipulation, water dropping that could have been done for that one specific scene in that movie, right? So just another thing to remember when you're looking at all these ads or before and afters or these, you know, whatever dude's Facebook profile picture, because everybody has their shirt off in their Facebook profile pictures nowadays, but that's not only probably a result of great lighting, you know, oil, a pump, a tan, a shave, but also now we know that dropping water can have a significant effect. And I think if you guys want, just sort of jump on Facebook, friend me up, and I threw the picture up. But it's pretty, for me, it's a very, very lean photo, right? And that's just a result of dropping a couple pounds of fat, but mostly it's just a result of dropping water.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I guess bringing it all together now, where we, I guess what we're saying is, maximum strength doesn't necessarily require food. You can be 24 hours fasted and in a semi dehydrated, I guess, you dehydrated the day before state and still lift right up to your maximum potential.
Yep.
Body weight's kind of irrelevant to strength.
Yeah. I mean, body size isn't, but your specific weight in terms of how much fat or extra water you're carrying isn't really going to make a world difference. I definitely didn't feel any different. Yeah, I mean, I train fasted regularly, right? So it's not like my numbers dropped off significantly. I missed my one bench because just not used to it. In my deadlift, I could have easily pulled more. And the numbers I pulled weren't too far off of what I was expecting. So I don't think it had anything to do with it as much as it did just first contest jitters. And then the other thing is that people need to be aware of is that, you know, when people talk about their contest weights, especially when they're talking about doing it raw, we can get into that, but with no bench or squat suit or deadlift suit, but just no belt, just show up, those numbers, while they may sound a bit lower than you expect, man, they ever put some hard work in to hit those numbers with all that sort of getting used to the pauses, the reps, and just the actual flow of the event.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I mean, you think you got anything else?
No, that's it. The other thing I would say is that it's the whole pausing of the bench press and even going all the way down and sort of hitting that really low point, the squat, you know, the event I didn't do, it makes sense if you're a power lifter, but if you're not, if you're just training for size and shape, well, I don't recommend an excessive bounce or, you know, a one-quarter squat. I don't think you should get too freaked out about following these things if you're not playing or competing. Is it something when sort of people start reading about it, it just sounds cool, so they incorporate it into their workouts? Probably not the best idea. You know, it's good to always have that bar under control when you're benching, but I don't think that you need to unrack it, pause for a second, bring it down your chest, pause for a second, bring it back up, pause a second, rack it, right? I think that you just be doing a lot of extra work without adding a lot of extra effectiveness.
Yeah, fair enough. And then to and your point about squatting, powerlifting depth is significantly lower than most people in the gym have ever. Most people have never even done a full powerlifting depth squat. No matter how deep you think you're going, you probably aren't actually going as deep as required. And I don't think it's necessary. It makes the lift significantly more difficult. You'd have to have a lot better flexibility. The technical sort of know-how of managing the weight at the very bottom also becomes, if you're sloppy with a rep, you can kind of really mess up your back and your hips. So it's, again, powerlifting depth on squatting is not necessary to get good leg development.
Yeah. Oh, you know, the other thing I want to add in is that if you're interested, it's a great experience. I mean, if you're thought, what would it be like to do a powerlifting meet? At least the people that we're dealing with, the Ontario Powerlifting Association, OPA, I mean, extremely friendly, really open to absolute beginners who are on the realm of not knowing what they're doing at all, like myself. They're really good, really accommodating, and even the people at the meet, the other athletes, really nice, helping out, explaining things to me, like having to have knee length socks and stuff like that. It was just a good experience. So if you're thinking that you have to wait until you're a 500-pound bench presser before you go and do a powerlifting meet, not in the slightest. Right? In fact, the earlier you go and try it, the more you're probably going to learn from it, rather than going in thinking you have to kill it and win. Be worthwhile just to go and check it out and take part.
Yeah, if you're interested, everyone's supportive, and everyone will be shouting. Even people that met Brad for the first time that day were all shouting and cheering for him. So it's, the culture there, everyone's very supportive. That's for sure.
Yeah, so I would say that it's a different culture. It's a very unique culture, but it's a supportive culture. So if it's something that you've been interested in, there's no reason not to try it.
Fair enough.
Yep.
All right. You got anything else?
Yeah, that's all I got.
All right. So for Brad Peelan, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Phi Life Podcast.